Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
When it comes to healthy eating, there can be a lot of conflicting advice. So my next guest has written a new book that combines nutrition, public health advice and medical research in an effort to demystify the science behind how to live a healthy life. The book is called Everybody Should Know This, and its author, Dr. Federica Amati, who's a lecturer in nutrition at London's Imperial College School of Medicine, is on the line now. Good morning to you, Dr. Amati.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So nutrition science, it's at a tipping point of sorts. There's never been so much interest in healthy eating, I'm sure you'd agree. And you've really clearly explained in the book why we should all be making nutrition a priority for lots of different reasons. Will you take us through some of those reasons?
Yes, of course. I think what's really clear from evidence around the world and from really strong studies is that making changes to your diet is the most powerful way to help reduce your risk of chronic diseases, which now are the diseases that most of us will die of, sadly, are nowadays diet-related chronic diseases. So really the power of food is becoming so clear. And by making these changes, by taking food more seriously, and by also refinding the joy of food and making it part of our day instead of always trying to, you know, grab and go the quickest possible meal possible, or even replacing meals with shakes, for example, re-enjoying food, making it part of our day again, all these things we think will make a massive improvement to our health, for all of us, for the entire population. Everybody can benefit.
So when you talk about all of these chronic diseases that are impacted so profoundly by our diet, will you run us through some of the headline conditions that we might be able to address if we start eating properly?
Yes. Yeah, so to date, the biggest killer that we have is heart disease. And heart disease is driven a large amount by hypertension, so high blood pressure. And we know that diet and lifestyle have a direct impact on our blood pressure. That's one example. The other is this growing rate of obesity that we see across the population and across all age groups now. Obesity is a chronic condition that is caused by a food environment that is not supportive of health. So we are living in an obesogenic environment, some people call it, where the food that's available to us, the lifestyle that we are led to live, mostly due to work commitments and the way that we move around, means that we're much more at risk of becoming or of suffering with obesity. Type 2 diabetes is also a metabolic condition that's, you know, massively impacted by our dietary quality. And so all of these conditions are there. They're top three causes of chronic disease and death in countries like the UK. They are all directly linked to nutrition. There is, of course, also cancer, and most cancers, I'm not going to say all, but most cancers are directly linked to diet, and we can increase or decrease the risk of these cancers with our diet and lifestyle.
Okay, and then if we look at the totality of a person's life, we lay the foundations for this right back at conception, don't we?
Yes, that's right. So one of the key messages from my book is really the importance of the first 1,000 days. And that is the period between conception and second birthday, where, you know, entire bodies are formed in the womb. The placenta is a brand new organ that we create to really support this new life. And every single cell, every single organ, the blueprints of those organs and the actual structure are laid down during pregnancy.
I was just going to mention this really important aspect of this nutrition and diet, and the impact that you say can have on our mental health as well, which I think is something that people might overlook.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So, yes. I mean, so mental health, and it's kind of impossible to separate mental health from physical health, right? We are one thing. We don't walk around with our minds elsewhere. So when we're thinking about health overall, it always includes mental health. And we know that having certain dietary patterns increases or decreases your risk of mental health disease. And actually, there's some good randomized controlled trials. So these types of studies that really show us whether something can have an impact directly. There are some good trials that show that if you change diets, if you make some changes to the foods you're eating, you can actually decrease the severity of conditions like depression by a really measurable amount. So some studies have shown a 30% reduction in depression symptoms in people with severe drug-resistant depression by giving them a Mediterranean dietary intervention. So just by changing the food that they're eating.
So I know you say it's never too late to change your diet, to make some positive changes. But people who are listening to this now, who are in their adulthood and think, well, I could probably do a little bit better. What would be your top tips for them, the things they should be introducing to their diet and perhaps taking away?
Okay, so I think always focusing on what we can add is more helpful. The evidence is clear that it's what we're lacking on our plates that's actually driving most of the disease. So add more plants on your plate. And by that, I mean beans, legumes, lentils. Add more nuts and seeds. If you're not allergic to nuts, they're a wonderful food. Having a handful or two a day is so good for us. Add more green leafy veg. Add more fruit. Sometimes fruit is demonized. When we're talking about whole fruit, not the juice, just whole fruit eaten in pieces or bites, that's so good for us. And then where possible, try to make your meals at home from scratch so that we're avoiding the addition of non-nutritive additives that we don't know what they're doing, like so artificial sweeteners, emulsifiers. We didn't evolve to eat those every single day. So where you can, cook from scratch. And I always say, begin with breakfast. Most of us are at home for breakfast, or we're able to prepare something to take with us to work. So if you can make breakfast a meal that really encompasses these principles of adding more plants, having a fiber-rich breakfast, it can really help us to set us up for the rest of the day. And it's the first meal that we can change.
So given what you said there about breakfast, do I take it you're not a fan of intermittent fasting?
It's not that I'm not a fan, actually. I think time-restricted eating as a form of intermittent fasting can be really helpful. But the way I view that is that it's essentially observing and respecting the natural rhythm of the day. So we eat in the daytime when we're awake and we're active, and we stop eating when it's time to go to bed. Now, the science has shown that actually what time you have your eating window is up to you, although it's more helpful to make sure you finished eating by 9 p.m. So if you're somebody who quite likes to eat between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m., that's going to be great. And that means that there's plenty of time for breakfast. And breakfast can be at different times for different people. It doesn't mean that you have to eat the minute you roll out of bed. Wait until you're hungry. Then have your breakfast.
Well, that's good advice. But why the 9 p.m. rule then? What is so problematic with eating after 9?
So we did a study. We did a science study at Zoe where we looked at what time of day seems to impact metabolic health. So these markers of metabolic health that then are good markers for long-term chronic diseases like we spoke about, type 2 diabetes, heart disease. And people who ate after 9 p.m. tended to have a worse metabolic profile than those who had finished eating by 9 p.m. Now, again, this is about 80-20 rule, 80% of the time. Sometimes you will have a birthday party and you'll have dinner later. And, you know, other times you may maybe find that you're home late and you need to have dinner a bit later than usual. So it's not an absolute rule, but generally speaking, if you've eaten by 9 p.m. and you're going to bed between 10 and 11, that seems to be a rhythm that our body really likes and thrives off of.
And
so that's
in general, and we're doing, you know, general tips and advice here for people.
Yeah.
If you're feeling sluggish, if you're feeling bloated and lethargic, nutrition really is the first place you should look towards. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I would certainly agree with this. I think nutrition and certainly sleep, especially if you're feeling very tired, it's hard not to feel tired if you haven't slept. But your diet can impact your sleep quality. And also your diet really helps to support good energy levels. We've seen that with our randomized controlled trial called Method that was published in Nature Medicine, that actually people who followed Zoe dietary advice, their number one best outcome that they reported for themselves was their improvement in energy levels. Right. And we all want to have better energy, don't we?
We certainly do. Federica, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. That's Dr. Federica Amati, and the book is called Everybody Should Know This, The Science of Eating for a Lifetime of Health, and it is available now.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.